All right, Eric. Steve? Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have just convened the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. We are gathered today, June the 26th, 2017, for the purpose of a work session on House Bill 5025, the Oregon Business Development Department, and a public hearing on House Bill 2012A, relating to Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Region. And so I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 5025 and ask Mr. Bender to provide an introduction.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and subcommittee members. House Bill 5025 is the budget bill for the Oregon Business Development Department. And we have posted to OLIS the standard materials that we have for each of your budget work sessions, budget bill work sessions. So we have a recommendation memo. We have KPMs, and we have a recommended amendment to the bill. If it's all right with you, I would like to just go through the recommendation memo. Business Development Department's budget is actually rather complicated, and it takes a little while to go through the recommendation because this is an agency that has different program areas that operates a number of different programs that are organized into a number of different program areas. First, we will go through the operations or the central services portion of the agency budget. Then we'll go through the business innovation and trade, which are the primary house for the business development programs. Then we will go through the recommendations for the Infrastructure Finance Authority, which are the primary community development programs and the seismic rehabilitation grant program. And then there will be additional program areas for Oregon Film and Video, the Arts Commission, and debt service. If I may refer you to the memo, which is dated June 21st, for the recommendations on this budget, you will see that in the memo we've identified some of the major subtractions and additions to the budget. And in the overall, I'd just like to paint an overall picture of what is happening with this budget. The Business Development Department's budget is, under these recommendations, does take some, reductions in order to balance the general fund lottery funds budget. And there are a number of reductions that are in the operations area that will reduce the staffing available to the commission, to the agency, and also reduce some services and supply support. So this is a budget that will have some impact on the department's ability to provide the services that are being asked for it. There are also reductions in some of the programs, some of the major programs, as well as some additions. So if there are no further questions, what I'd like to do is start with the LFO 102 work session presentation report, which is the standard work document that you've been looking at. And if you start going through that, if you go to page 2, you'll see that this is the operations program area. And we are recommending a budget for operations totaling $9,414,606 with 32 full-time positions, which is equivalent to 32 FTE as well. If you would turn to page 3 or look at page 3 of the LFO document, page 3 of 21, the first recommendation that we have for this program area is the package 801 recommendations that reduce general fund, or in this agency's case, lottery funds, in order to balance the statewide budget within the available level of resources. We are recommending that you make a reduction here of $81,570 in lottery funds. And this will be accomplished by reclassifying a position, a management position, downward to an Information Systems Specialist 6 position, and also to reduce some funding that is in the operations budget for contingency services and supplies funding. So this is our recommendations to help balance the statewide budget in this particular program. You will also find package 802 on page 4. This is a package that is not found in all agency budgets, but it will appear several times in this recommendation. These are technical and revenue adjustments, and basically the purpose of these adjustments are to update and to make more accurate the forecast of beginning balances and revenues available to the agency in the 17-19 biennium budget. For the operations area, we are recommending that you increase the lottery fund's beginning balance by $208,921 and establish a $179,511 lottery fund's reversion to the DAS Economic Development Fund. What this means is that the agency will have more beginning balances in lottery funds than was anticipated at the time they developed the budget more than a year ago. So it's not unsurprising that these numbers have been revised in that amount of time. The mention of the lottery funds reversion refers to the fact that lottery funds that are not used or committed do revert back to basically the state central account. That is the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund. This is an important part of balancing the statewide budget because we are relying on these monies to balance expenditures throughout the state budget. We're relying on the reversion of these monies.
Mr. Bender, just for the edification of people that are listening and perhaps new members to the committee, this reversion occurs under what circumstances? A project isn't ripe to go forward, the bonding runs out. Maybe you could elaborate slightly on that.
The reversion would occur for several reasons, in terms both of projects, as you mentioned, or even in base operating expenditures, such as paying for salaries and then standard services and supplies. The rule is that monies revert when they are not spent by the end of the biennium. So these are funds that we do not expect to be spent by June 30th. It's just, Friday. It's coming up. But are also not committed. So if the agency will often enter into commitments to provide funds to businesses based on meeting certain criteria, but not distribute the funds until those criteria are met. In a situation where an agent, OBDD, has a formal commitment to provide funds to a recipient based upon certain conditions being met and is expecting those to be met next biennium, those funds do not revert. Those stay. But if it's the case that there is no commitment of funds, then they revert.
Senator Hansel.
Steve, maybe this isn't the time to ask, but I'm just curious. I know the counties have agreed to pay from their allotment of lottery funds into this department to help fund regional solutions. And when you have vacancies there, as you indicated, all the money that is not necessarily expended, and I understand that there was maybe a surplus because of salaries, positions not being filled primarily, of nearly 400,000, of which half of that was what the county put into it. Which they could have otherwise, I think, used for regional strategies operations. What happens to that? Do the counties get that back to invest in regional strategies? Is it lost to them? I mean, it was a commitment on their part to fund a particular program that didn't end up being funded for that. It seems that in fairness, maybe they should be able to have that money back if it wasn't expended on what it was intended for.
Senator, I can answer your question. I do want to make one correction, though,
sure,
to what you said on the record, and that is those particular positions that you're talking about are actually not in OBDD. They're in the governor's office. But the situation that you described where there's a similar type of reversions in the governor's office budget because positions were not filled, the situation is that those under the law will revert to the Economic Development Fund None of those go to counties absent a specific action by the legislature to send it there. If there are no further questions, I'd ask you to please look at page 5 of 21, which is the Business Innovation and Trade Division of the agency. BITD is the acronym by which it's often called, operates the primary business development programs that the agency operates, and these are generally funded by lottery funds. The general fund in this division is used to support the solar incentivization program, which is a new program that the legislature established in 2016. It operated for 1 year in the current biennium. Now it's going to be operating for 2 years in the upcoming biennium. The recommended budget here is for total expenditures of $89,160,787 with 56 positions, 55 FTE. The first recommendation that we have is on page 6. This was a request that came that the agency had in the governor's recommended budget, and it is funded at a level here of $750,000. So this package provides $750,000 in lottery funds for the Rural Opportunities Initiative, which is a program to assist rural communities in improving access to training and technical assistance for entrepreneurs. This will be a grant program. The funds will be transferred to counties, and it is approved at the funding level of $750,000. Item on page 7, we have an item that or a package that does not impact the general fund or lottery funds budget. This is an other funds package that provides or that increases other funds expenditure limitation to the agency of $441,097 in other funds and establishes two permanent full-time positions so that the COVID program can respond to legislative mandates and the recommendations of a task force in providing certification of businesses that qualify for contracts that are established for businesses that are minority, women-owned, or veterans or service-disabled veterans owned. The new positions are focusing on reducing any fraud in the program, fraud being a case where a company would claim to be eligible for certain types of contracts but really isn't, and implementing a new program that would provide certification of businesses that are owned by service-disabled veterans. The next package on page 8 is package 108. This is also a package that the agency requested and we are recommending. This is a general fund package. It provides $219,995 and one permanent full-time position to administer the solar incentivization program established in the 2016 legislative session. This is not really a new position, even though we are establishing a new position, and it certainly looks like a new position, but the position that was established in 2016 was filled but established as a limited duration position, and this was, you know, LFO did establish it this way, but we do concur with the agency that this should have been a permanent position all along. So we are basically correcting that because this is a program that will operate through 2023 unless the legislature changes the law. So this continues that position. On page 9 and 10, we have the package 801 adjustments, the reductions that are designed to help balance the statewide budget. And there are a number of reductions here I'd like to point out. This package reduces lottery funds by $3,468,849. And those are through a combination of reductions to programs and a reduction to administrative support. The program reductions include a, I'm going to round here. If you're looking at the report, you can see the exact number, but approximately $2.8 million in lottery funds reductions to the Strategic Reserve Fund. The Strategic Reserve Fund awards, however, are financed from a combination of both lottery funds and other funds that are available to the Strategic Reserve Fund. These other funds are primarily loan repayments. So if the many times there are loans offered from the Strategic Reserve Fund, or there are forgivable loans, but the business, you know, where it was essentially intended to, expected to be a grant, but the business did not meet the job creation standards for having the loan forgiven. In those cases, there are repayments, there's interest earnings. What this does, what this recommendation does, is it also increases the expenditures from these other funds of $800,000 to the effect of offsetting part of the $2.8 million reduction and leaving a net funding reduction of about $2 million. With this funding reduction, we do expect there to be approximately $10 million available from the combination of lottery and other funds to support new awards out of the Strategic Reserve Fund in the upcoming biennium. The second programmatic reduction in Package 801 in the BITD division is a $400,000 lottery funds reduction to the Oregon Innovation Council program. That's about a 2.2% reduction from CSL, and the funding level with this reduction in place would equal about $18.2 million. Finally, there is our reductions associated in administrative costs of $229,219 in lottery funds. These involve eliminating a position, a halftime program analyst three position, and reductions in services and supplies. On page 11, we again have the revenue adjustments for this part of the budget, and we are recommending that you approve increases in lottery funds beginning balances of $6,422,170 and establish a $3,230,382 lottery funds reversion to the Economic Development Fund, that you increase the other funds beginning balance by $1,263,333 and reduce the other funds non-limited beginning balance by $7,360,902 and the federal funds beginning balance by $4,894,304. There are also some reductions in income amounting to approximately $950,000. With these reductions, the budget will better reflect the actual funds available to the agency. The next program policy package in for BITD is on page 12, and these are the program enhancements. This package provides $4.1 million in lottery funds for three specific programs. There is $2 million provided for additional operating support for the Oregon Manufacturing Innovation Center, a collaboration between business, academic, and government partners in Columbia County to enhance innovation and competitiveness in the metals manufacturing and advanced manufacturing sectors. With this addition, funding for the center will be $3.6 million for operations in the OBDD budget. There is also a $1.6 million for supplemental support for the Small Business Development Center network. With that addition, the funding level is equal to $4.26 million. And there is $500,000 to support the Regional Accelerator Innovation Network, RAIN, which supports entrepreneurship and development of startup businesses in the South Willamette Valley and Mid-Coast regions. On page 13, package 812 12 eliminates vacant positions. You've seen this in other agency budgets. In this particular case, we are recommending that you eliminate three positions, which are 2.5 FTE, and that you reduce lottery funds by $704,259 to reflect the elimination of the positions and services and supplies, support expenditures associated with them. The agency, one of the things we noted here is with the Farmer Loan Program, we are eliminating that vacant position there, but the agency will continue to operate the program after this elimination. This is not statutorily repealing the program. Next, on page 14, we're up to the infrastructure division of the agency. We were recommending a total budget of $433,715,968 with 37 positions, 37 FTE. This budget, if you compare it to where you were during the current biennium, is a drop of $90.6 million or 17.3%. And the reason I want to mention that here is to reiterate one thing about the recommendation here. We are not including in this recommendation any bonds-funded programs because those programs are being reviewed by the Ways and Means Capital Construction Subcommittee. Most of those expenditures, the bond programs, are spent here in the infrastructure program. Since we don't have anything in here for them at this point, that's why it's showing such a large decline. But the programs that I'm talking about, you did hear requests for additional bond support for seismic rehabilitation grants, for special public works general, special public works levy, for regional solutions. There have been a number of these requests, and none of them are in here. That doesn't mean that all of them have been rejected. It's just they'll be in the end of session bill if they are approved.
It has been a matter of some interest for many of us about regional solutions, and the question is whether or not that money will go through OBDD so that it is reposited in one place, assuming it comes in the cap construction bill, that then it would go to OBDD so that there could be some secondary review project so that we make sure that local enthusiasm doesn't overcome fiduciary responsibility and we end up with projects that are either partially funded or unable to proceed for whatever reason. And I'm just looking for some reassurance that that will be the methodology employed.
That is correct. If the bonds, if bond proceeds are approved for regional solutions, they would be distributed through OBDD, and OBDD would have fiduciary responsibility over those funds.
And then one more question. Would they be restricted by region, or would they go into a single pool where all regions of the 11 regional solutions could come in and compete? Because not knowing how much bonding will be available, and knowing anecdotally that we are vastly oversubscribed in requests, then we have ability to meet all of those. Do we have any preview of how that function will work?
We do know that in their budget request, in their budget hearings, the agency, through Regional Solutions, did request that the funds not be designated by the Legislative Assembly to specific projects. Again, the Capital Construction Subcommittee will need to review that and determine if it does want to provide funding in that manner or in a different manner, such as it has been in the past, where specific projects are identified.
Let me, I haven't quite beaten this to death, so let me take one more stab at it. That is, there are 11 regional solutions regions, and my question is, projects notwithstanding, is there a methodology by which those regional solution regions can come to OBDD and make application for projects that are all but done but for the state money? And are there protocols so that one particularly skillful region couldn't overwhelm the available resources and take them all? I'm looking for the protocols to know how this happens. In the past, we've handed it out by geography and specific projects. And I don't know whether or not Cap Construction is at liberty to say right now what their methodology for disbursement would be, but I'm just trying to get some sense of how this would work.
I cannot enlighten you as to their deliberations on this issue.
Okay. Please continue.
Okay. Please turn to look at page 15. That's where I am in the recommendation report. Here we have, again, LFO analyst adjustments. So these are reductions designed specifically to help rebalance the state budget. We do have a recommendation here to reduce lottery funds by $260,014 and to eliminate one full-time operations and policy analyst position in the industrial lands program and funding for position-associated services and supplies. There will remain a position in the industrial lands program after this reduction. Package 802, technical and revenue adjustments. Here again, these are the things that don't affect the expenditures and don't show up in the bill. But we would like to note that we're recommending you approve so the agency can adjust its other funds beginning balance, its other funds non-limited beginning balance, and to reduce some of its income from interest and revenues. And we're recommending approval of that. The next division of the agency's budget is a pass-through, and that is on page 17. The agency passes through operating support funds that you provide for the Oregon Film and Video Office. The recommended budget is $1,207,545 in lottery funds. This is the current service level amount. The next division of the agency is the Arts Commission, or the Arts Division, which includes both the Arts Commission and the Cultural Trust. We are recommending a total budget of $16,164,406 with 11 positions, 10.5 FTE. On page 9 of the work session report, you will find package 801, the package with reductions to balance the statewide budget. And here we are recommending reductions in general fund expenditures of $607,303, offset somewhat by other funds increases of $259,282, and a reduction in no positions, but one position is reduced from full-time to half-time, so we have a 0.50 FTE reduction. The components of this reduction include a reduction in general fund support for grants of $524,869. This is expected to reduce support for grants from all fund sources for the Arts Commission by about 10%. It does not have any impact on funding for the cultural trust portion of the division. There's also a recommendation to shift how the salaries and benefits for the division's director and assistant director are paid from 100% general fund to a 50-50 split between general fund and other funds. This will better reflect the administrative responsibilities of these positions over both the Arts Commission and Cultural Trust programs, which are funded from a variety of sources, including other funds. This action reduces the general fund appropriation by $259,282 and increases the other funds by the same amount. There's also a general fund reduction to reduce a executive assistant position from full-time to half-time, as I mentioned earlier. And there's an increase in general fund for services and supplies. This will, combined with the other reduction in 801, this reduces support, but it also better reflects the Arts Division's current spending patterns. On page 20, there's package 802. Where we are recommending for the Arts Division a recognition that they will have a beginning balance of about $304,254 higher than the budget would otherwise indicate. And then the last division of the agency is the division that pays debt service on lottery and general obligation bonds. We are recommending total expenditures of $91,797,425. There's nothing really recommended here. We're not recommending any changes from current service level, but it is, I think, important to note as you're reviewing this budget that that is a very significant amount of the total general fund and lottery fund that we provide to this agency is to provide debt service for bonds that have been issued on behalf of seismic and economic development projects. And unless there are any questions, that completes our recommendation.
Colleagues, no. Representative Meek.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Bender, just a quick question on the debt service. Where can we find information of what's the term, what's the length of the current bonds that we owe? Is it 10, 20, 30 years?
I do believe it varies by type, and I can get you that information. I think generally, recently the state's been issuing most bonds in just a 20 or 25 year period. I don't know if there's any additional, if anyone here in the room can provide more specifics for you, but I could be happy to get back to you with that.
Oh, but thank you, Mr. Bender. We can just refer me somewhere.
Okay.
Happy. Thank you.
Okay, other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Bender.
Co-Chair Johnson.
Well, do we have an LFO recommendation, Mr. Bender?
I thought he said that concluded his recommendations.
I'm sorry.
Did I hear the magic phrase?
I did say that, actually, yes.
I apologize, Mr. Co-Chair.
I heard the magic word.
Co-Chair Johnson, let me just say that there's some portions of this budget that I'm very, very pleased with. There's some portions that I'm tolerable of, and there's some areas I wish we could have done better. All that being said, I would move the LFO recommendations to House Bill 5025.
Thank you. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Any questions, any discussion, any objection? Adopted. Mr. Bender.
Next, we have posted proposed key performance measures on OLIS as a separate document and also included in the recommendation document. It's the same item in both places wherever you look for it. But we are recommending the key performance measures and targets as shown in the table that we have attached. There are no changes in the key performance measures themselves, which include numbers of jobs created, jobs retained, personal income tax generated, export sales of assisted clients, contracts awarded to Oregon businesses under the receiving assistance and from the General Contract Assistance Program, the dollar amounts of those contracts that I just mentioned, the number of new industrial sites certified as being project ready, and the number of community capital construction projects that are assisted for planning, the number of actual projects that address public safety and health issues, and the number of projects that assist economic and community development, and the standard customer service measures. I'd be happy to answer or respond to any questions, but
one that I should know the answer to, and I'm embarrassed to say that I don't, but to hold the agency accountable for industrial sites certified when they cannot motivate the applicant, I'm wondering what compensation, what mitigation we allow in reviewing this portion. I'm very well aware of a site that the applicant just won't get off the dime. And so I'm wondering if you could comment on that briefly.
I would like to comment on that, if I may, Madam Co-Chair. And if you do look at the particular key performance measure targets for that particular KPM, which is KPM number 6, you can see that in the most recent year, only one industrial site was certified. And we are recommending, after discussions with the department, that that be maintained as a one-per-year KPM target. Clearly, I think this reflects the situation that you are referring to, as well as just a lack of potential sites that are out there and that are eligible to be developed as industrial sites. So we recommend that you continue this as a KPM to continue to receive formal information on activity in this area, but it is not an area that in recent times it's been possible to actually certify very many of these.
I'd make two comments before I go to Representative Reardon. We shouldn't discount the regulatory burden on bringing some of these sites up to a point where they are usable, for example, a brownfield, and also the fact that there have periodically in the legislature been requests for massive amounts of money for a program that, frankly, has certified one industrial site in the last year. We shouldn't lose track of the fact that maybe this is a program area we want to come back and talk about again in terms of measurables and in terms of outcomes. Representative Reardon.
You must be reading my mind. Thank you, Chair. But does it count on this scorecard if you raise the usability from one level of usefulness to the next? So if I take an area, for example, out of a floodplain where, and then elevate that to where it's not in a floodplain, that increases the usefulness. Does that count as
not in this particular measure, Representative?
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Colleagues, you have heard the LFO recommendation. Is there a motion, Mr. Co-Chair?
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. I move the LFO recommendation on key performance measures.
Colleagues, any questions, any discussion, any objection? They're adopted.
Madam Co-Chair and subcommittee members, based on your votes, we recommend a total budget of $47,948,791 general fund, $117,634,016 lottery funds, $227,242,814 other funds, $40,730,835 federal funds, and $207,886,281 in other funds non-limited, and 136 positions, 134.50 FTE. These are reflected in the Dash 1 amendment, which has been posted.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Co-Chair Johnson, boy, you know, when they put these and all these numbers with all the commas, it makes the floor statements really very difficult. I had one today where they wrote out the number, which confused me even more. That being said, I move adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 5025.
Thank you, colleagues. You have heard Representative Gomberg's motion. Any questions, any discussions, any objections? Adopted. Bring us home, Mr. Bender.
LFO recommends that House Bill 5025, as amended by the Dash 1 Amendment, to be moved to the full Ways and Means Committee.
Co-Chair Johnson, I would move 5025 as amended to the full committee with a do pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Representative Gomberg.
Co-Chair Johnson, I just wanted to focus in on one aspect of this rather broad and detailed budget. It has to do with the RAIN program, which we have discussed. And I remember during our discussion earlier this year, we indicated that we had heard 2 years ago that that the program would not be back this year for more money. But indeed, there was a request put forward, and we are supporting that request here today. But I wanted to indicate, as you know, I've received a letter from the director of RAIN dated June 21st of this year, in which he states in part, Oregon RAIN is transitioning to self-support. State funding in our upcoming biennium is key to our ability to raise funding from other sources. And I think that's an important note to put in the record should we be in this place again in 2 years, wondering what to do.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right, colleagues, any other discussion, any other points for the record? Any objection? So ordered. All right, we need carriers.
Well, I was thinking if you'll read the numbers, I'd have the good representative carrier.
Madam Co-Chair, I would be very pleased to take this to the House floor, and I'll even take it to full. If the good senator will not display his telephone on the desk at the next meeting with the logo from a particular university south of a better university. And, that one.
All right, and then we need a volunteer for the Senate floor. Senator Monroe volunteers. All right, colleagues, thank you very much. I will now close the work session on House Bill 5025 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2012A relating to Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Region. Mr. Bender, if you would introduce us to the subject. There was a sign-in sheet. We have one person signed up. It has been picked up, but there's still an opportunity if someone is moved by the spirit of testimony but has not signed the sheet. Seeing none, Mr. Bender, please continue.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. With your indulgence, I would like to just make one comment before we get to House Bill 2012. I would like to thank the members of the subcommittee. You just voted on the last of your agency budget bills that were assigned to you. So you have completed your work on agency budgets. As a reminder, the budgets that you have moved recommendations to the full committee include this one, Oregon Business Development Department, the Employment Department, the Housing and Community Services Department, the Bureau of Labor and Industries, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, the Racing Commission, the Real Estate Agency, the Department of Aviation, the Public Utility Commission, the Department of Transportation, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and the Department of Veterans Affairs. So thank you for your work.
This is an opportunity, Mr. Bender, to thank you and the rest of the professional staff in LFO for being, in your case, a very capable quarterback for this committee and our portfolio of budgets, and then the individual analysts that have helped us so capably through this session. We will be meeting again, so this is not our last meeting, so we needn't all say goodbye to each other quite yet, but thank you for pointing out that our budgets are now complete. So, the sign-in sheet appears to have another. I will take the liberty of signing you up, Representative.
Thank you.
Okay, fortuitous timing. Mr. Bender was just about to introduce the subject.
Thank you. House Bill 2012 establishes the Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Region and the Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Region Board and Fund. This board will be charged with promoting economic development along the border region of Oregon with the state of Idaho. The bill, as it comes to you, includes $10 million of lottery bond support to provide funding for grants and loans for businesses that qualify to receive funding under the program. There is also, in addition, an impact to the department of approximately $40,000 in administrative expenses. LFO would recommend, if this moves forward, that that be provided to the department in the form of lottery funds. But at this point, you are only scheduled for a public hearing on this bill.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Bender? There being none, Representative Benz, welcome.
Representative Benz, very good to see you here.
Yes.
Thank you. For the record, Cliff Benz, State Representative, District 60. Thank you so much for hearing this bill. It's an extremely interesting bill, and I think I know a result of our speaker's visit for 3 days last year about this time to the Ontario Baker City area. I think she was impressed by the challenge that our adjacency to Idaho presents to our little counties over there, particularly Mount Hare County. And as a result, this bill was created by her staff, and I've worked with them over the past 6 months on this bill off and on. I've been very clear in expressing to my constituents the challenge that our budget faces, so they have not gotten their hopes up over whether or not this would receive funding. I think everyone understands, though, the value of the group that would be formed up and its ability to come into this building and ask for changes to laws that create competitive difficulties for us with Idaho. This is my 39th year in that community, and I can share with you the incredible difficulty in retaining businesses and keeping people enthusiastic about staying on the Oregon side of the river. And so, as you all know, as one compares whether land use laws or whether it's employment regulations or whether it's environmental issues, Idaho has not gone in the same direction as Oregon. And as a result, many different businesses have chosen to pick up and leave. The one thing we have going for us that has been the lifeblood of this of that area has been our lack of a sales tax, and that has turned Ontario into what I call the drive-in window for Idaho. And that's not enough. Retail jobs are fine, but they're inadequate when it comes to the type of high-wage jobs we need to keep people in that area. We think this bill would help our little space, and we would appreciate your support.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions of Representative Benz? Senator Monroe.
Yeah, what you really need is a transfer station.
Thank you, Senator. That's brilliant, and I really appreciate the thought. I really do. And with our transportation package makes it out of here, perhaps that also will follow. As many of you know, because you're on the transportation committee with me, we have an element of that nature in it. And if that happens, that would be transformational for that area.
Good.
Colleagues, Senator Hansel.
I'd just like to point out that much of my district also borders Idaho, and I'm not included, is the fact that there are no communities on either side of Hills Canyon. A reason for that?
It may be the difficulty crossing the canyon.
I got you.
I would just share, colleagues, that I've had the opportunity to be in Ontario on a number of occasions for Ways and Means on the Road and for the transportation, as well as coming over on my own volition. And everything that Representative Benz has said is true and then some. It is distressing to stand on the Oregon side of the river and see the cranes and the evidence of economic activity on the Idaho side. Downtown Ontario is a far cry from thriving. Many little businesses persevere and stay on, but this badly needed boost to a portion of our state that has faced some extraordinary challenges, none the least of which was a crushing winter. Yeah. I recall being in a meeting with Representative Benz when the Snake River had been so plugged with ice and the very real possibility that it could give way quickly and inundate Ontario. So just as we have looked at other parts of the state that have suffered ferociously, and I think of Vernonia when our three schools washed down the Nehalem River, I think we ought to, as Oregonians, put aside our parochial differences and look at a part of Oregon that is gritty, hardworking, and struggling against some ferocious odds. And if there is a way for us to help move this bill forward, prioritize this kind of Oregon investment in a part of Oregon, that we would all come away with a good feeling that we'd done a square shake by some folks that have struggled. Onion sheds were crushed under the weight of the winter snow. I don't know how they've done in terms of revitalizing, but were I a farmer standing next to a flattened onion shed and I could look over the border and see Idaho beckoning, I might think twice. And if in this appropriation there's some opportunity to keep those folks in Oregon to service a transload facility, I agree with your characterization that could be transformational for our very far southern eastern portion of our beloved state. Thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
Well, I just want to...
Senator Hansel.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I would just echo the thoughts of our co-chair, because, you know, being a part of Eastern Oregon but not in the same spot, it's very needed, and I applaud your efforts and I'm supportive.
Thank you.
All right, colleagues, any other questions for Representative Benz?
Well, we're glad to see him back looking reasonably healthy.
On the sign-up sheet is Mr. Harder, and I have just seen Mr. MacArthur slide up into the front row. So, Mr. MacArthur, I'm adding you to the sign-up sheet. Why don't you join Mr. Harder? Mr. Harder.
First. Thank you, Chair Johnson, Vice Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Gomberg, and members of the committee, Mike MacArthur, Association of Oregon Counties. I testified in favor of this bill in the policy committee. AOC is in support of this bill. We have a saying, if you've seen one county, you've seen one county in Oregon. There are very much differences regionally. We support the effort here to look at the regional differences that exist in essentially what I refer to as West Idaho. And there are significant differences there, as they are in many other regions. And I think part of the genius of this bill is the opportunity to try some new things, to look at some different regulation modifications, to try some new incentive programs there. And so we're very much a support making the effort here to try something different in an area that very much needs the help. Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions for Mr. MacArthur? Mr. Harder.
Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, for the record, I'm Chris Harder, Director of the Oregon Business Development Department. I, too, previously testified on behalf of this bill in the House Committee on Economic Development and Trade. In that committee, in this committee, around our budget, I've talked pretty extensively about the state not being a single homogeneous economy and that we're a collection of unique regional economies. I think echoed to the gentleman next to me. It is this belief of why Business Oregon currently invests in local regional projects and communities, and we take that approach. We all are pretty aware of the situation in Ontario and the surrounding community and some of the challenges they have. So it is for this reason that I do support this bill and its approach, which is a local regional approach to tackle some of their challenges and opportunities. And offer my support on behalf of the agency.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Harder? Representative Reardon.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I'm just haven't heard anybody say what they might do with this $10 million. Do we know yet? Or
why don't we invite Mr. Benz to, or Representative Benz to join? You guys don't have to leave.
Thank you for the question. At one time, someone asked what it would take to try to jumpstart that economy and that little space. And I told them about $50 million, $26 million for the transload facility, $6 or $8 million for the new CTE building, which we're already doing about the building with the wonderful cooperation of our school districts and our college to enter into contractual arrangements we've made to guarantee the employment of 18-year-old graduates so that people in that challenged community could look forward when they're 12 or 13 or 14 years old and know that they would be employed the moment that they graduated from high school. That has been transformational. Speaking of transformational, that program is called Poverty to Prosperity. We put it together 6 or 7 years ago. It's been absolutely astounding how well it's worked. Of course, we need a new type of road system to reach part of the areas, and that would be part of that money. We also need a new, because of the, this is really sad, but there's a, we take our water for the Ontario area out of the Malheur River, and when we take it out, it has background elements in it that are higher than the federal standards. And so when we clean up the water, we actually have to clean it up to a level that makes it cleaner than that which we took out to begin with. And that requires $7 or $8 million to try to get our water treatment facilities back into shape so that when we do attract the type of businesses I think will be forthcoming, we'll have water sufficient to serve their needs. It's odd because on the Idaho side, those same standards are not being imposed. And I should have said state standard. And it's, again, it's extremely challenging on occasion to try to make sure we meet these standards, none of which one can argue with. Cleaner water is always better, but it takes lots of money to try to catch up. So those are just a few of the things that we would be looking at as we have this local group figure out what we're going to do.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If I could just add a testimonial, I've had the opportunity to meet some of the principals involved in their Poverty Prosperity program, and in the interest of full disclosure, in my private life, have been a contributor to it. I think it's a remarkable program, and the level of community engagement is extraordinary.
If I may, Madam Co-Chair, I think we had a couple of those young people testify at the Oregon Leadership meeting up in Portland. And to hear them talk about emerging from poverty is really amazing.
Okay, colleagues, any other questions or comments for this distinguished panel? There being, whoops, Senator Monroe.
I was going to say, my district, we're having a little problem with the federal requirements on water as well. It's called Bull Run. It's the purest water in the world, and yet they're making us close our reservoirs and so on and put caps on them and spend great bunch of money when there's been no evidence at all of any danger to health.
On that cheery note, thank you, gentlemen, very much. Anyone else moved by the spirit of testimony? Last call. All right, there being none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2012A. And Mr. Bender, is there anything else for the good of the order today?
Just to note, please, subcommittee members, we have posted bills for work sessions both tomorrow and Wednesday, and we do anticipate adding some for Thursday as well. So please note the calendar and let us know if you have any questions prior to the meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Bender. Colleagues, any comments? We stand adjourned.